I think we will call this meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. It's good to be back at the State Office Building for our first Climate and Energy Committee hearing of the 2024 session. Thank you all for being here. And I want to take a second to introduce our new committee legislative assistant. Robin will be joining us. And so I just want to give a moment to let them introduce themselves.
Hi, everyone. My name is Robin Mercer Taylor. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm really excited to be here.
Great. And then you may also notice that Polly is joining us today. Mike is out, but Polly is going to take good care of us and make sure we get this hearing, keep it moving. And so with that, I guess our first order of business is the meeting minutes from March 29th of 2023. If anyone has had an opportunity to look at the minutes, I would welcome a motion.
Madam Chair, I took a look at them. It was fun to look back, and I would move their approval.
Great. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The motion minutes are adopted. And, we have to gavel, I guess. I never gavel. So today we are going to hear from the Department of Commerce. As you may recall, last year we implemented a number of new programs through the department, and so we're going to get an update on the hard work. We're getting a little bit of feedback. Yeah, I could probably not use a thing at all, and sure. All right, we'll try that. I don't know. Does that work better? I don't know. Okay, great. We'll try that. Thank you. And so maybe we'll go ahead and call the Department of Commerce up. I think Commissioner Arnold and Assistant Commissioner Grancy and John Kelly is going to be joining, Director of Government Affairs as well. So thank you for coming to committee. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, good afternoon. So Michelle is my deputy commissioner who is right there. We're going to swap halfway through this. I'm going to give a little bit of an intro and then need to be other places. So let me let John get situated. And this is John Kelly. He's our government affairs director. And all right, let's go ahead and get started. So good afternoon, Chair Acomb and committee members. As I said, for the record, my name is Grace Arnold, and I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I'm joined today by Deputy Commissioner of Energy Resources, Michelle Grancy, and our Governance Affairs Director, John Kelly. I'm really excited to be kicking off the 2024 session here in the Climate and Energy Committee with an overview of all the work that we've been doing to implement the new energy programs from the 2023 session. We've been busy. It's been fun. It's been challenging. I'm going to walk through a few things at a high level that give some context to where we sit within the administration's implementation, and then I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Grancy to talk about all of the program details. So, as we all know, there were historic investments made by the legislature in last year's budget and our shared climate budget. Deputy Commissioner Grancy is going to take you program by program through what our team has done since last year. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what you can expect from us this session and this year. We can take questions along the way. That's what we're here for. All right. So you're likely to see this slide in a number of presentations. It's, I think, helpful to understand that there were over 4,000 pages of session law enacted in 2023. It was historic across the board. And what that's meant is that we have passed some of the most impactful energy and climate legislation in Minnesota's history, and that, relevant to this committee, that our clean energy future is really can be a reality. We can create good paying jobs and can make investments in the people most impacted by a changing climate. So we are working together across state agencies to make Minnesota the best state for children and families. Our We have over $400 million in new energy-related initiatives, and you can see a little bit of the press that we've had from some of those. That has meant a ton of work for our team, which is really exciting. And I'll talk a little bit more about just how much. You know, the way that we're thinking about this in the department is that we have a clean energy future where every Minnesota family can have a home that's healthy and safe, a home that stays warm in the winter, cool in the summer, and that you don't have to think about it. You turn on the lights, and you know you're not harming the environment. Your energy will continue to be affordable and reliable. So the 2023 session helped to bring our vision for Minnesota's clean energy future closer to home. New programs we've established will help drive us toward every Minnesotan having an opportunity to contribute and benefit from Minnesota's clean energy future, living in a home that's comfortably warm in the winter and cool in the summer, and having reliable electricity powered by renewable resources, and saving money on your energy bill. So to meet the moment we've adapted our agency, Deputy Commissioner Grancy will talk a little bit about some of the organizational changes that we've made in a moment, but we have reorganized our Department of Energy, our Division of Energy Resources, to make sure that we are organized to be able to implement all the programs that we have. It's been a little bit of a logistical challenge. It's strained our HR, financial management, and minute capabilities, but we've learned a lot, and we're, you know, growing while maintaining top-level customer service for our existing programs. We've been accountable to the governor's office to track our progress and celebrate milestones. We've implemented new project management tools. We've been briefing up on high-priority items like 100% clean energy by 2040. And we have been working with the climate subcabinet to coordinate interagency efforts. We do One Minnesota goal reviews, so we have a quarterly greenhouse gas emissions reduction and climate resiliency goals that we are accountable to the governor's office on quarterly. And so all of that is to make sure that we are, you know, making sure that we are implementing all of the wonderful things that you all passed last year. So we need to continue the momentum we've established, so we have are really focused on kind of honing in. We've hired over 21 new hires, and we've grown from a small size agency to a mid-size agency. We're continuing to represent the public interest and maintain our existing programs, and now we'll turn to making sure that we are kind of focusing and have discipline in the rest of our implementation, which is continuing. We're not done. We're also going to be engaging community and stakeholders on an ongoing basis. We have a limited scope for our 2024 budget and policy proposals so that we can really focus on implementation and delivering on what you all asked us to do last session. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Grancy to give you a tour of all of the programs that we've been working on, and look forward to working with the committee over the next few months. All right.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate you being here, and just really want to thank you for your leadership, especially after last session, when really it's put Minnesota on the map and as a leader, certainly in the Midwest and across the country, in addressing the green transition and renewable energy. So thank you. Welcome, Deputy Commissioner Grancy. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Acomb, representatives. For the record, my name is Michelle Grancy, Deputy Commissioner of Energy at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I want to first thank you. Thank you for entrusting in us to do all of this heavy lift. Today, I'm excited to be here to briefly speak to the fantastic work that's happening across the department and also across Minnesota to support the implementation of the new energy programs set forth by you all. You can also find regular updates on our work on the Commerce website, and it literally is being updated on a daily, if not sooner, basis. Over the course of 2023, while standing up over 20 new energy programs set forth by the legislature and another plus 30-plus federal and state initiatives. Under Commissioner Arnold's leadership, we also realigned the Division of Energy Resources in accordance with four core tenets of our work: energy and telecommunications, residential affordability, clean energy development, energy reliability and security, and finally, regulatory affairs. Through this realignment, we're able to provide services more effectively and connect the policies set forth by the legislature in a more collaborative and comprehensive way. As you know, just to set the stage, prior to 2023, we already had a full plate of regulatory policy and programmatic duties. We continue to advocate on behalf of the public interest and from the PUC. We oversee the energy conservation optimization efforts of utilities throughout Minnesota. We continue to implement the low-income home energy assistance program and the expanded weatherization assistance program. We have successfully developed an updated state energy security plan. We provide unbiased technical assistance to the PUC on the environmental review of large-scale energy projects. We've significantly expanded our energy grants and contracting efforts and continue to provide technical assistance to governments and local communities working to increase their efficiency or implement their clean energy goals. And that's just a highlight. So while we're modernizing our systems, moving from spreadsheets to dashboards and moving into the 21st century, there is much more to do, but we have started. As we move forward, we will continue to update our website by building out our reporting capabilities online in order to provide more up-to-date information at your fingertips. So today, I'll provide an update on what has been done specific to the new state energy programs that you set forth. And I'll just say that we will gladly return with additional detail on any of these programs, as well as the additional initiatives led by the department, or bring specific experts in that are busy back at the office working on implementing these initiatives. First, I'm going to have John just play a short video that reflects one of the new units within the division working to seamlessly provide services to Minnesotans through collaborative coordination of resources and programs.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nessa Phillips, supervisor of a new team in the Energy Resource Division at Commerce called Programs for Equity and Innovation, or the PIE unit. Equity in energy is the focus of my team's work. The PIE team has four goals: to bring in more federal funds to serve Minnesotans, to increase use of data to design energy programs with greater equity, to build up the Energy Navigator program, and to stand up new programs such as Strengthening Minnesota Homes, Residential Panel Upgrades, and the Pre-Weatherization Program. Pre-weatherization is a good example of equity in energy in action. Too often in the past, eligible clients were bumped from the Weatherization Assistance Program because their homes needed asbestos removed, leaky roofs fixed, or other repairs were needed. Thanks to state legislators, we have pre-weatherization funds to get homes fixed so that they can get federal funds for weatherization. And we have more federal funds through IIJA for weatherization. Every home that gets weatherized has energy bills reduced on average by 30%. Through pre-weatherization and weatherization, more Minnesotans are in homes that are safer, warmer, and healthier places to live. We are working to serve more Minnesotans through state and federal dollars. Thank you, Energy Committee.
Apologies for the lack of volume there.
But I think we got the gist of it overall, so thank you for sharing that.
Okay, so jumping in, I'm going to walk through a few programs that we approve but are implemented by Excel, then those programs that are fully launched, those that are going to be launched in short order, and those that are still in development. Finally, I'll wrap up my comments with the significant amount of federal pursuits that we're also doing in support of these initiatives. So first, just to highlight those programs that we're in process of approving or have approved, With solar rewards, or the solar energy production incentive, in 2023, the legislature provided additional funding for solar rewards. The program incentives were expanded by 3 years and modified so that 50% of total funding is reserved for income eligible households, with a total appropriation of $19.5 million. So in 2023 and now into 2024, Excel submitted their application. It was approved in 2023. The Solar Rewards Program year started on January 29th of 2024. The income qualified eligibility criteria was expanded to include additional routes for entry in order to ensure accessibility by low-income households. And Commerce requested more detailed synopsis of the IQ or income qualified participant information in future reporting years to determine areas where additional outreach may be needed. I'll also just note, we receive in June of each year a synopsis of the year before, and since Solar Rewards has been going on for a while, in 2023, Commerce received the summary of the 2022 program year, including projects approved in previous application years. Over 1,100 projects were completed, representing nearly 12.2 megawatts DC of solar capacity. The cumulative installed solar capacity of solar rewards from 2014 to 2022 is over 60 megawatts. The 2023 now summary report will be expected June 1st, and that will kick off the review cycle for future years. Then there are two others that are in process of approval. The first is the distributed energy upgrade grants program, which establishes a program to provide funding to Excel to complete infrastructure investments necessary to enable customers to interconnect distributed generation and energy storage. Excel was required to file a plan to Commerce by November 1st, containing a description of how the funds would be used and expected outcomes. This is an open docket, so I will not go into the details of the review at this point, but you can see details in docket 23-458. There was $10.25 million appropriated, and if we go to the next, the Solar Powered Storage Incentive Grant Program, I've also heard it called Storage Rewards. This was funding for Excel to operate a customer-sited incentive-based program to reduce the cost of on-site energy storage systems that are co-located with solar electric systems. There was $4 million in the appropriation. Excel has filed their plan, and the discussions are ongoing, and the program development is in progress. Again, details for that one is in docket 23-459.
And just for members, excuse me, Commissioner, it seems like that slide isn't in our packets. Just for members, if they're looking through for that, you have to look up there to get the info. My apologies. We can forward that to people if they need it.
We'll double check. Sorry, Chair. John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Commerce. We'll send an updated slide deck. I'm not sure what happened.
Thank you.
All right, so let's go into implementation successes and programs launched by the department. First and foremost is electric vehicle rebates. It's been a popular program. This program establishes rebates to eligible purchasers of new and used electric vehicles, as well as plug-in hybrid vehicles. Purchases had to have happened after May 25th, and there's different requirements as far as eligibility according to how much you pay at the MSRP. The total appropriation was over $15 million. I'll just note that there is a link that allows for live updates of the status of applications in whole. So if you click on that application portal, you can see immediately exactly where the funding is at. It was launched on February 7th. As of the submittal of this slide deck, 63% of the general fund was already reserved and 100% of the first tranche of the RDA funds, because the RDA funds were broken into fiscal year 24 and 25. So the first 100% of fiscal year 24 was already reserved, and I believe 8% of tranche 2 or fiscal year 25 was already reserved.
Popular program.
Absolutely. Then looking at the EV vehicle dealer certification, this program was launched on February 1st. It provides up to $40,000 in grants to auto dealers to seek a certification from a manufacturer to sell electric vehicles. There was $2 million made available through fiscal year 27. On the very first day, we received 113 applications, which means the program is fully subscribed. There was over 60 applications received in Excel territory and over 50 applications outside of Excel territory. So we have seen significant uptake across Minnesota. Now, Solar for Schools. This was a popular program that expanded or was modified in 2024. The program for 2024 was launched on January 10th. We have a two-part program with Solar for Schools that allows schools to initially indicate their readiness and interest, and then once that is verified, they're given a number of months to complete the full application. The program expands. Again, it's a K-12 and state colleges and universities to be able to adopt solar. And the program last year expanded from the existing Commerce Administered program to be statewide with $30 million in total appropriations. So the program is launched. It is open. We are receiving applications currently. I will just note two for the first year of the program, just a little retroactive. 53 schools across Minnesota have already installed solar on their schools via this program. There are also more than 50 schools that are currently on track to add solar. So the expanded program again was launched on January 10th. It looks like the number of applications received by February 7th was 62, with about equal requests inside and outside of Excel territory. We're going to try this once again or not? We had one other video. It's an exciting principal and a teacher talking about their Solar for Schools experience.
Why don't you go ahead and play it?
Ago that Minnesota State was going to offer different grants. They're calling it Solar for School Grant Opportunities to put solar panels on different schools throughout the state of Minnesota. And when we heard about it, all we knew, we didn't know how hard it was, we didn't know what was in front of us, but all we knew was that if a school in Minnesota was going to have solar panels, it better be the School of Environmental Studies. But to be able to bring in the legislators, who this was important to them too, and they had a vision, and they made it happen. And then for them to take the time to come in and see it in action, it just kind of brings everything full circle. And that's one of the ways that our future leaders, our students, are going to make change, is to understand how they happen on a big scale and on a small scale, in their class at their desk every day, and then also connecting with legislators. And so the sky is the limit. And we hope that other schools are really able to take what we've done and be really as inspired as we are.
I feel so grateful to be working at a special place like this. And I really feel grateful that people came together to create this unique learning experience. In my mind, this is the best of all worlds. I get to show up and do something I really love, that I really connect with, and we all come here and connect under this theme in a way where our community builds, and we are all feeling empowered that we could do something that we really care about.
And before we move on, I will just say, few of us were at that event that day, and I think on your slide you had it November 29th, 2024. I believe it was 2023. But anyway, It's a great event, and so continue on. And then just so people know, I think after we get through the fully implemented programs, we'll pause and take some questions from members. So in the next couple of items, we'll take a pause. So continue, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Another program that was revised this last year was the Community Solar Garden program that was revised to increase access to solar by low to moderate income households and what is known as the LMI or low to moderate income access garden program. The team has been working very hard on this program as well, and we're able to launch the new program design in January of this year with applications opening on February 1st. On the 21st of this month, we'll begin reviewing applications and begin allocating the program's 100 megawatt annual capacity, and then applications will be opened on a monthly basis until the allocation is completely reserved. The team is also working on the RFP for a study that was mandated through the legislature last year to compare the new CSG low to moderate income access program with other jurisdictions to evaluate program costs and to analyze impacts of the program. And then I will mention MINCIFA. So the Minnesota Climate Innovation Finance Authority. Not only did you all charge us with standing up new programs, you also charged Commerce with standing up a new quasi-governmental agency, or the Minnesota Climate Innovation Finance Authority, lovely known as a green bank, in quotes. It was established to fund clean energy projects, create clean energy jobs, support environmental justice, and maintain energy reliability while reducing energy costs. The total appropriation was $45 million. And so just by way of an update, we had the board established per the legislature in October of 2023. An interim director, Pete Klein, was hired and began January 3rd. He's formerly the vice president for finance at the St. Paul Port Authority. A chair and vice chair have been elected to the board, and the second board member meeting was held January 17th. MINCIFA expects to deploy tens of millions in additional funding from a $20 billion grant competition that is currently in review by the EPA. MINCIFA also recently posted a request for information on the 7th of this month. The RFI seeks to build out potential pipeline projects for MINCIFA, including potential collaborations with the Department of Energy Loan Program Office. I'll just note that LPO funds can leverage MINCIFA funds up to 80 to 1, so it's a pretty significant opportunity. The RFI responses are due back March 15th and will inform the design of financial products and programs housed within MINCIFA. And then, should I pause, or I still have a few that we've already launched?
Finish those.
Okay. So, State Competitiveness Fund. This is an exciting overall program that includes matching grants for energy projects to enable the use of federal grants, low interest loans, and clean energy tax credits created under the Federal Inflation Reduction Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It provides a local, state, federal partnership through grant assistance and support. The total appropriation was $190 million. The first one in your slide deck is on the local capacity assistance grants, that there was $6 million appropriated for entities with expertise and experience in grant development to assist eligible entities to prepare grant applications for the use of federal funds. We received over, so the RFP went out, the request for proposals. We received over $7 million in requests, and we are in the final stages of grant negotiation with a number of these capacity grants to 25 groups that cover Minnesota, including 16 that were named specifically in the legislation. While I can't tell you the specific names, as the contracting process is not quite complete. I can tell you that 10 regional initiatives or development commissions, 5 tribal nations or tribal entities, 3 rural electric co-ops or municipal utilities, and 7 universities, community-based organizations or environmental justice entities will all be awarded. And when we can come back or share, we'll show you that those entities cover all of Minnesota.
We'll keep the secret.
So the next one I'll mention is the State Competitiveness Fund. So this was a matching grants program that's been highly popular of $100 million. We have stood up the program, and 2 requests for proposal rounds are now complete. Round 1 was focused on projects that were already in queue with applications to the federal government, and we received, actually between both programs, 72 applications to date, requesting over $150 million. In round 1, $18.5 million has been reserved in state funds for 9 projects that have estimated that they will leverage an additional $84.5 million in federal dollars. Those round 1 awards have been reported to the Legislative Advisory Council, so you can go up on the LAC and see a listing of all of those awards. Round 2, we anticipate, will be approximately $47.3 million in awards. For 60 projects that are under final review, and then will be reported to the LAC in, I would estimate, the next 2 to 3 weeks. That will leverage, that $47 million will leverage an estimated $703.6 million in federal dollars. This is, when all in, is a 12-to-1 match of federal to state dollars, incorporating some of those additional project private dollars and more. So we would anticipate that leverage might even be higher. So we are finalizing those local capacity grant contracts. We're notifying the round 2 match applicants. We'll get that round 2 posted at the LAC and then post another RFP for the remaining funds. The second or final part on that is that I'm not yet referencing is the tax credits and incentive program. That was an additional $75 million that we will allow for collaboration with MNCEFA and with those DOE or Department of Energy loans available through the Inflation Reduction Act to fund projects that benefit low-income and disadvantaged communities. The tax credits and incentives program will allow support for projects supported by the IRA direct pay options that are just now beginning to roll out. And there's potential collaboration across state agencies, of course, as well. This program is under development. Take a pause.
Yeah, great. Well, we'll give you a second, but I can't thank you enough for sharing the wonderful success. And I will just say, with the State Competitiveness Fund, to have a 12-to-1 expected match, that's pretty incredible, and what a great way to have Minnesota benefit from those federal programs. And so I think there were a couple of questions. Representative Swazinski, I think you were first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to be back. Just thank you for coming before the committee. Just going back to page 20, just kind of initial question kind of on the Minnesota Climate Finance Authority. Kind of what of that $45 million in total appropriations, are there any matching dollars, or is that operating dollars? And then how much is the board actually consuming? Is it these volunteer positions that the board members, or are these paid positions? And then what are folks making on this board?
Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Chair Acom, Representative Swazinski, thank you for those questions. I'll see if I recall all of them. So the board is established in accordance with the statutory mandates that were set forth. There are members on the board that represent various departments, which are paid in the sense that they're already paid, but they aren't paid in addition to for those roles. There are an additional 7 or 8 positions on that board, and I'll have to double check if there is an allowance for that. Oh, John Kelly has an answer.
Madam Chair, Representative, they're getting the same expenses covered that any board member would have through the Secretary of State's process. They're not compensated like other, the PUC board or something like that.
Okay, sounds good.
I believe you also asked about overall leveraging. So that is where the $45 million will be is appropriated. And currently we have just one staff member, Pete Klein, who is the interim executive board. The board has also approved the hiring of an administrative assistant. So we do anticipate that expense to be coming in. But with the leveraging of the DOE loan program office dollars, there will be opportunities to leverage up to 80-1. I mean, it's a pretty significant federal leverage. And then there's the IRA tax credits and incentives that can also be paired because of the direct pay provision. So I would welcome an opportunity to either come back or bring Assistant Commissioner Pete Wyckoff, who's been really leading out on the development of this, or Interim Director Pete Klein, who could go into further detail on the programs. Yes.
Madam Chair, Representative, the question also was about the funds that are currently available to the MnCIFA board. So per the statute, there are kind of two pots of money that they could, the first initial, there was $500,000 in the legislation that basically went to the department to help the initial stand up of the board, hiring the interim executive director and the admin costs that come with the board and standing all that up and them hiring folks. And then once the board is appointed, which it has been, they had their first meeting, they're able to utilize, and they don't, again, like the deputy commissioner mentioned, they're doing an RFP that they have to set up a financial plan. And they also have to set up a plan of operation also. So I don't think that they're spending it, but they are authorized to use up to, I believe, 25% of that first tranche of dollars. There are two pots of money that funded the MnCIFA in the 2023 legislative session. The first was from the Energy Omnibus, and the second was from the Jobs Omnibus. And so there are two pots there. But basically right now, Interim Executive Director Klein is focused on hiring, I think, an administrative assistant. They need to hire, an attorney, things like that, and then they'll be working with the board, and the board will direct, how the money is spent going forward.
And I will just say it's my hope that we have Mr. Klein in from MnCIFA to give us a briefing at some point, but I think your questions are great, and if you have any others, Representative Swizinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just going back, we can flip back to page 15 in your presentation. Kind of talking about the electric vehicle rebates. So it looks like, a fair amount has been spent already in this particular area. Have we tracked at all kind of from an income standpoint who's asking for the rebates or whatever we're calling them to see kind of where they're at in the financial world?
Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Chair Acomb, Representative, thank you for that question. We do within the application request demographic information. As the application portal was just launched here 6 days ago, we don't have aggregate data yet on who all is applying for those grants. But we do anticipate being able to roll that up in accordance with what is submitted by those individual applicants.
Representative Swizinski.
Thank you. And then, Madam Chair, I forget the program just on how it lays out. Is there limitations like per household? How often, let's say you have a family of six and you're buying six electric vehicles for your family, are you able to receive six of these, or is it like a one per household type of situation, or are businesses allowed to apply for these funds?
Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Chair Acomb, Representative. Another great question. So in accordance with the way the statute was written, there is an allowance for up to one rebate per person. So if you had two people in your household that both were Minnesota residents and were able to apply, that would be allowed. For businesses, the statute defined it as one per business entity. And so in that case, there's one application per business or other entity.
Representative Susan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just so we heard in the news earlier this month that Hertz Rental Car was liquidating their EV stock of over 20,000 vehicles. So they wouldn't have used some of those funds to as part of that liquidation process of kind of moving out of that heavy side of EV market to leverage it. So they would Hertz would only apply for one particular vehicle under the statute. And then also, so when it's application, does that also pertain to, you know, so oftentimes you have young people in a home that may be purchasing a car where a parent particularly already took advantage of this program and they co-sign the loan. So essentially that would be a double application, or would they consider that who's ever the primary on a loan for a vehicle to be considered their second application, or how would that process work?
Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Chair Acomb, Representative, my understanding, and I can double check this with the team, because they did everything in alignment with the statute as it was written. My understanding is that you could have one vehicle purchased per individual driver. You know, you can't purchase one for your two-year-old just so you get two. You know, one per person, as far, because they do have to submit their driver's license number or some validation through that. So I don't believe it has to do with financing. It has to do with the individual entities or individuals within the household.
Representative Susan.
That's fine.
No, go ahead and finish.
You had other folks on the list?
There's a couple other people
on the list. Once you get through the list and if there's room, I'll ask more then later.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Representative Garofalo.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. First question, didn't you guys, like, have money for, like, electric bikes too? Like, giving people electric bikes? Do you, is that commerce or is that another department?
That's a great question.
Thank you for that question. I believe that was in the transportation bill.
Okay, so commerce didn't do that?
That's
correct. Okay. So thank you, Madam Chair. You know, in my final year here, I'm just thankful that I can finally share my opinions on stuff and be opinionated.
Finally. You've been holding back?
I have, yeah. This information may be outdated, but earlier this month, I looked at the Commerce site to try to track not what the spending was or was appropriated, but the actual amounts of CO2 reduction that has occurred based on these programs. Is that being tracked at all? Like, I know we're spending a lot of money and we're hiring a lot of people, but do we have data to show we spent this amount of money and here's the amount of CO2, like the tons of CO2 that have been reduced?
Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Chair Acomb, Representative, thank you for that question. Currently, we do not have that information. As a reminder, many of these programs have just been launched in the last 6 weeks. However, some of that information will be available as those programs are fully subscribed and as we receive the data and can aggregate it.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, because historically I haven't been able to find that data. And, you know, obviously there's many purposes for these programs, but the stated objective is that this is meant to reduce CO2 emissions. And I think we would all agree that if we're reducing CO2 emissions, we should be doing it the largest quantity at the lowest possible price. And I think, so I've taken upon myself a little project of calculating what I think these programs are costing in terms of the per ton reduction. And maybe I can convince the chair to let me provide an overview to the committee at some point if she's so inclined. But it would be helpful, even if we, certainly the Department of Commerce has the resources to do this, is to maybe just go to look backwards and provide, for example, solar rewards and say this is what we spent in incentives on it. And this is the amount of CO2 that we think has been reduced as a result of these incentives. Is that something the Department of Commerce has done or can do, again, retroactively?
Assistant Commissioner or Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Chair, Representative. So there is a CO2 report that the Pollution Control Agency, and we partner with them, but they lead out on the CO2 report, and they have done some modeling in relationship to the questions that you're asking. That is not something that we currently have the capabilities outside of more broad assumptions, but we do partner with them closely, and they're able to do some of that. I would look to our partners at the PCA to speak to the specificity of what they can and can't do.
And Representative Garofalo, just for you to be aware, next week MPCA is going to come and talk about their emission reductions. So that'll be a great question.
So, Madam Chair, yes, the PCA does track on an aggregate level what our emissions are, and they do it by sector, but they don't do it by program. The PCA doesn't administer the programs, the Commerce does. So I'm kind of hearing both that this is something we will be doing going forward, but we don't have the capabilities of it going backward. That's the evaluation of whether these programs work. It's not whether we spend money or grow government. It's whether, you know, how much are we spending and how much CO2 are we reducing. And we've had problems getting that data on these programs in the past, and it would be, they have the resources to do it. There's really no reason they can't, unless it's an answer people don't want to see.
I think it's a great question.
Good, thank you.
We'll continue to consider that.
Or you have my report.
Which we're really looking forward to seeing. Next, we have Representative Grerick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To both of the points made by Swedinsky and Representative Garofalo, community solar gardens has been sort of an issue since it was, I think since it was first initiated in 2013, mostly because of the cost associated with it. And I'm just wondering if you could let us know, since you've got that on slide 19, what is the current cost or the rate per kilowatt for solar gardens, community solar gardens?
Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Chair Acomb, Representative. So the low to moderate income accessible community solar garden program that was launched, the design was launched in January, and applications opened February 1st. We are just initially receiving those applications. That will close on the 21st, and that is when we can begin to review those to see what the cost to install are going to look like. I don't have that information today. I apologize.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So historically, the community solar gardens rate had been established kind of by the PUC, although they might disagree. They don't regulate them, which they highly disagree with, that they don't have some input into the siting of it. I'm wondering, are we at 12 cents a kilowatt, 13 cents a kilowatt, 14 cents a kilowatt, 20 cents a kilowatt? Like, where are we at now? Because it's anywhere, the contracts that have been leaded in the past have been anywhere between 12, 13, 14 cents. And I'm wondering, what is the plan for this new launched community solar gardens program?
And maybe before I pass it over to the deputy commissioner, I think one of the characteristics of the new program is that depending on the percentage of low and moderate income, there are different rates for different qualifying groups. And so if there are more low and moderate income subscribers, there will be a lower overall rate. And so it will be dependent based on the mix of subscribers. And that will potentially be unique for each solar garden. And maybe I can pass over to Deputy Commissioner Grancy for more detail.
I think Chair Acomb spoke to it well. I don't have information on the previous program in front of me, so I won't speak to that today. But the new program, I think you characterized it well.
And then we'll also say in an article I think that I saw in Blois today was going over the community solar garden program and speaking to some of the developers that because the applications are just coming through now, it is unlikely that any will be built before the end of the year. So it may take some time to come up with that. But all of the rates are based off of net metering, and so it's a percentage of net metering that will be the individual subscriber's rate based on what category they're in within targeted areas of low-moderate income, community organizations and so forth, nonprofits. Representative Ware.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh,
yes, Ware.
Yes, no, you got it. And listen,
I'm questioning myself.
I'm confused too sometimes. So I know that I was gone because I was very ill last session. I was gone for a portion of this. And so I'm just trying to wrap my head around this new configuration of rate. Mm-hmm. I don't recall, and maybe Representative Garofalo might remember if we've ever done anything like this in the past, but we're going to base a rate on the rate of poverty of the person. Is that how I understand? So if they're a low to moderate income, they're at a different rate that they'll receive back in net metering than, and I believe you said a lower rate.
So
help me understand how. Go ahead. Sorry, Madam Chair.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. My apologies to you. It's based on, so the purpose or the incentive, the desire of the new program is to reach more residents, individual residents, and low and moderate income Minnesotans. And so with that, there is a scale. It's different categories that you can fit into based on different demographics. And so a person, if they fit within the low and moderate income category, I believe they will pay or they will receive, I believe the credit is 75% of the net metering. I'm going to forget so I'm not going to guess. But it's their rate is less than it would be for somebody who maybe wasn't in that demographic. And it was, much of the criticism of the program over the years has been that it's for-profit companies that are benefiting. And so we wanted to make sure that that was not the targeted groups that we were focusing on. And so a more beneficial rate for low and moderate income Minnesotans and nonprofit organizations that are benefiting our communities. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, well, we'll have a deeper conversation, maybe offline, but it's a little odd to me to say we're going to literally pay, net meter back, so pay that person back depending on their economic standing. And I know that this was kind of a corporate slush fund before because we had these big corporations coming in and doing community solar and raking in millions of dollars, and it was incredibly popular. And, of course, because we have people coming from all over the world to do it here because we have such high rates. Okay, so I'm going to move on. That's interesting. I have another question, though. So the EVs, the rebates, I was at one of my co-ops nearby, and they had some really strong concerns about the EVs drawing so much from the grid and being able to sustain that. And they had folks, and you can see this with Xcel Energy, because now they're asking to do different rates that are, you know, peak versus non-peak, and they've got a very complicated system that they're proposing, but it's based on the fact that EVs just have such an intense draw. And it's so intense that if you have two or three in a cul-de-sac, all of a sudden you've got just a massive draw that is far and excessive to that entire neighborhood. And so I'm wondering, since I've heard that already with my co-ops, are you hearing that from co-ops, municipalities, the IOUs? Are you hearing that from anyone of this concern about this intense draw on our grid with EVs coming online and incentivizing the EVs to do so? No incentive, of course, to charge off-peak, but I'm wondering if you're hearing anything.
And I will just say there are incentives to charge off-peak from utilities and so forth. But
yes,
but I will
not from us, Madam Chair.
I will pass this off to Deputy Commissioner Grancy. And then after this question, I think we better, I wanted them to be able to get through everything. And so maybe other questions we can pause toward the end. But Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Thank you, Chair Acomb and Representative. I will say that as electric vehicles come online, that is something that is both being assessed by utilities across Minnesota as well as the Public Utilities Commission, just as any other potential significant increase of electric load. And there are electric vehicle transportation plans that have been, or and some that may still be, submitted to the Public Utilities Commission. So there are a number of folks, and as Chair Acom mentioned, utilities that are looking at various rate designs to incentivize the draw of those electric vehicles at times in which it could actually be a better benefit to the utilities. Is it a concern from some? Absolutely. Are people assessing that and looking for ways to both recognize that this transition is happening and how to do it in a way that's beneficial? Absolutely.
I would just have one quick question.
You bet. Okay. Representative Brer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. The last question I have is on page, on slide 13. And I'm just wondering if you could just give us one example, as this is going back to Xcel Energy and they're doing infrastructure investments and doing interconnectivity, because when I talk to the solar developers, that is of great concern to them, is not only community solar is sucking up all the air in the room, and they have concerns about that because that's a first in and it's a must do. And so the interconnectivity, I'm wondering if you can give us some specific things that are being done with that $10 million funded to Xcel, if you know anything that they're currently doing.
Deputy Commissioner Grassi.
Chair Acom and Representative, I am not going to speak to any of the components of that docket today, as it is an open docket. However, Xcel Energy may wish to speak to that if there's time.
And I will say that Xcel is coming to talk to us next week, and so that's maybe something that we can ask them to share with us that time too. Deputy Commissioner Grancy, do you want to continue on with your slide deck?
Thank you, Chair Acom. So next I'll speak through the programs that are launching currently that in the next here few months you'll see a significant movement forward. The first is the pre-weatherization and workforce training. During the last legislative session, you passed provisions to appropriate funding to create a pre-weatherization program to expand the breadth and depth of weatherization services provided to income eligible households and provide grants to train workers for careers in the weatherization industry. The total appropriation is over $38 million with a mix of multiple years. We are rolling out various aspects of this fund in tranches. In tranche one, by the end of next month, we anticipate all the pre-weatherization measures dollars will be rolled out to the local service providers to be able to start work in that area. Then in tranche two, there's a workforce training component to build out the pipeline. And we have hired a workforce training staff in order to develop out that program. There, I should mention that there's a lot of opportunities with the federal money to coordinate workforce training efforts. There's an IRA training for residential contractors grant that we've submitted. There's an IIJA energy auditor training grant that we plan to submit, among other provisions on the federal side. And then tranche three will be on the multifamily, and in coordination with the weatherization IIJA funding, we plan to bring on a consultant to help our current efforts in especially being able to address large-scale multifamily complexes. We currently, the WAP multifamily technical liaison RFP is slated for posting in March. We are also working on expanding outreach to address a diverse, extreme low-income and renter populations, as well as those experiencing high energy burden, in order to use this funding as a tool to increase program equity. I guess I'll just mention as well, because I don't know that it's in our later slides, the team has pursued, I think it's four now, competitive federal grants to also address other aspects of program inequities, so we continue to build up and build out that program. I'm just going to try to keep in our time and note a couple more here. The Tribal Advocacy Council on Energy was established with the idea that 11 federally recognized tribal nations would lead the Tribal Advocacy Council on Energy, that the department will provide assistance in accordance to what TACE requests of us. There was a first meeting of the work group of tribal representatives that was held at the end of January. They are now scheduled to meet monthly to establish a draft governance structure for TACE. And there was $300,000 appropriated for technical and administrative support for that. The goal is to have TACE formally kick off this summer. The school air ventilation program then. This establishes a pilot grant program to support assessments, testing, and equipment upgrades for air ventilation improvements in schools. The grants cover up to 50% of the total cost and cannot exceed $50,000 per school. We are required to prioritize grants that support schools and communities with high rates of poverty based on the receipt of federal Title I funds, and it includes a one-time $1 million appropriation. We are currently finalizing guidance and RFP language. We've been partnering closely with Local 10 on this program, and they've seen it roll out in other states. We have begun in promoting the program with communication materials. We've been in front of the Minnesota School Board Association, and applications will open by the end of March. The program is expected to serve 20 school districts if the max amount is awarded per school. Then, solar and public buildings. It establishes grants to local and tribal government buildings in Xcel service territory to install solar energy generating systems. There was a $5 million appropriation from the renewable development account. The website is launched. There is a webinar scheduled later this month on the 22nd to gather public input on the structure. And so far we have over 100 folks that from over 50 local governments and tribal nations that are registered to attend. We anticipate to launch this program in quarter two. And then finally, on the programs, before mentioning some of the federal efforts that are underway, I'll just note that there are a number of programs that we have hired or begun contracting for that we anticipate launching yet in quarter three or four of this year. The first ones that I'll highlight together, within the Inflation Reduction Act, Minnesota was allocated over $140 million in home efficiency rebates and home electrification and appliance rebates to put money back directly in the hands of American households. The rebates help save money on select home improvement projects that can lower energy bills. I'm mentioning that because the Here and Homes program are directly tied to the heat pump, the state heat pump rebates, and the residential electric panel grants. Within these programs for the Department of Energy, we submitted the initial application and have received our admin planning dollars. Then the Department of Energy has been establishing cohorts. The first cohort that was launched, three of the four states already had established programs, so they went with those states. We were invited to join the second cohort of states, along with Wisconsin, Colorado, and I don't recall the fourth state off the top of my head. We began just this week in that cohort to develop the full application in order to submit to the Department of Energy. The first one will be submitted at the end of March for the HEAR program, and that will directly tie back with the heat pump and residential electric panel upgrade programs. So you'll see the DOE, I guess they call it Sprint cohort. Our current plan is to launch probably late quarter four of 2024. The two state programs then will be stood up in conjunction with HEAR. There are five additional programs that are under development. Strengthen Minnesota Homes. There was an appropriation for $1 million for program planning and design. Commerce hopes to expand on that as that program is developed. We have met with other states who have implemented similar programs in order to build out what the program would look like and fortified. I think they may have spoken here last year. That is the certification program for a roof to qualify for the program, and we have met with the fortified staff. So we're in process, but that is a longer term program. We have also hired someone for the commercial building benchmark program, and we're working on developing the RFP there. Staff are hired for the on-site energy storage upgrade. This is geared toward on-site energy storage systems, and we are currently in the development of a stakeholder engagement plan. And then the electric grid resiliency grant, that program is $5.3 million. And we have hired staff and are working on programmatic development, aiming to align the program with federal grid resiliency funds. And then finally, the electric school bus grant program, that's a $13 million appropriation. That one, staff have been hired, and we're currently diligently working through the EV rebates and the dealer, and then we'll turn to this next program. So, finally, I would love to speak to the federal funding pursuits, and I've got a summary, and then there's some detail behind it. We have been actively partnering, and this is in part in conjunction with the State Competitiveness Fund. You know, our goal was to increase partnerships at the local and state level in order to pursue federal dollars, and Commerce is partnering with utilities, universities, non-governmental organizations, and other state agencies, public and private entities, all, to leverage federal funding through IIJA and IRA. The success to date, and this is just on Commerce-led, there are other funding opportunities that have been pursued in which Commerce isn't leading, but in those that we have submitted, includes over $574 million in federal funds as of the first of this month. An additional over $300 million in applications are currently under federal review, so those are ones that we have applied for but haven't yet found out what the results are. And we are currently working on an additional $750 million worth of applications, in which case $500 million the department is leading on, that are yet to be submitted before the due dates. Additional competitive formula and non-IIJA IRA funding pursuits are also underway. There is a listing here, and I can speak to any of these that you would like more, but these are the ones that have been awarded to date. You'll perhaps hear some of these acronyms as we go forward. There's a EECBG, or Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program. That's a formula grant in which the state receives some dollars. Tribal entities have a direct formula, and some of the large cities do. So the $2.2 million is through the state for smaller cities. There's a Resilient and Efficient Code Implementation Competitive Grant, and that is one that is in partnership with the Department of Labor and Industry, the Center for Energy and Environment, and a number of other entities have partnered around, in which that was submitted and has been awarded at $5.3 million. There's a Preventing Outages and Enhancing the Resiliency of the Electric Grid Formula Grant, And that is a program in which there's 5 years of funding. The first 2 years have been awarded. We're currently developing the third year application. That first year was almost $12 million. There's a competitive GRIP, or Grid Resiliency and Innovative Partnerships grant that is a large scale one that involves multiple states, MISO and Excel, and SPP as well, and that's $464 million. There are a couple more formula grants, and I don't need to maybe speak to each one of them, but just to know that we are doing our due diligence and submitting all of those formula grant applications in order to bring those dollars into Minnesota. And then finally, I'll mention a small $1 million grant, which was Environmental Justice Government to Government Program grant that will help expand the Energy Navigator work that we're doing in partnership with disadvantaged communities, and was actually written on behalf of the Community Energy Collaborative by one of the Community Energy Collaborative members. There's a number of applications that are submitted. I think for the most part we have, whether or not they were formula or competitive, the formula ones you can anticipate will come through. The competitive ones we will wait and see. The largest one that I'll mention, the Solar for All, one of the larger ones, the Solar for All application went in October. That one is for $100 million. There's another one focused on rural and remote areas that was a competitive grant done in partnership with a number of entities for $100 million. And then to the earlier comments with MNCIFA, one of the responsibilities in the legislation was that the department had authorization to also apply for funding on behalf of MNCIFA until MNCIFA is stood up. And one of those sub-awards for the large EPA grants, we are, if awarded, it's made it to the interview stage, would bring $50 million as a sub-award into Minnesota to leverage the MNCIFA state dollars as well. And then this we didn't put in the detail because they're in development, but there is there are additional federal funding applications under development energy auditor training that I referenced earlier. There's a second GRIP grant opportunity. We had applied for two. We were awarded one in Minnesota. We're going back and applying again for that second one with some revisions. Additional formula grants around grid resiliency for the utilities. The Homes and Here programs that I've mentioned already. Additional work on code adoption in partnership with that code collaborative. And then the climate pollution reduction grants that the Pollution Control Agency is leading, but we would have a significant role in as well. And with that, I will say that if you want to learn more, we're more than willing to come back, bring in additional staff and experts to be able to go in a deeper dive. You can also click on the links to go to our website. The other thing that is has been extremely popular is the Gov Delivery. We have over 25,000 subscribers to this kind of bi-weekly newsletter that provides all the information that we're able to capture and get out to folks, as it is our goal to be informative. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that thorough and informative presentation. And I will say the website with the updates for some of the programs has been helpful. I shared it out on a legislative update as well. I think it's people, I'm hearing from people that they are so interested in so many of these programs and wanting to get updates on them. And so I think that's a great place for people to be able to see what is actually happening and what applies to them. But with that, I know that, all right, did you have any more questions that I, Representative Rarick, that when I was trying to make sure they could get through, I wanted to circle back with you to see if you had other things you wanted to follow through on?
Just
Just one, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on slide 25, this is something that we talked about quite a bit last session about pre-weatherization. And we made a lot of discoveries along the way in committee, which doesn't happen very often. And I'm just wondering from then until now, if you've come up with kind of a list or parameters around what qualifies or what doesn't qualify for pre-weatherization. When we had the conversation before, it was so wide-reaching that it seemed like we would just literally build someone's house completely brand new, gut it, and start over. And so I'm just wondering if the administration has tightened up any of those parameters since it hasn't, you haven't issued any funding yet so far.
Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Yeah, Chair Acomb, Representative Rarick. Thank you for that. So I apologize if that's the impression that we left on as far as like a complete rebuild. With pre-weatherization, the focus truly is on being able to allow for weatherization to take place. And through the 2021 ECO Act, one of the requirements was to establish a pre-weatherization list of eligible activities. That is what we are using as the base for those pre-weatherization activities within weatherization as well. There will be a full, you know, has been and will continue to be that opportunity each year for people to submit additional ideas of what needs to be addressed. But predominantly where those funds go are for measures such as removing or encapsulating asbestos-laden vermiculite. There are sometimes roofing issues that need to be addressed or gradation, say to ensure that water doesn't come into the home. The whole goal is to get in, to be able to weatherize and ensure that every state or federal dollar that goes into weatherization isn't lost, because then there's a major rain event that causes mold and mildew, for instance. So it, we do have a pretty well-defined list as to what that will look like, but I can certainly follow up with more detail if you'd like to see that.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So specifically, one of the things that was raised and touted and the testifiers were very excited about the opportunity is if there's a situation of hoarding, and so if you've got a house just full of hoard, and this money was, at that time, the understanding was that it would declutter, de-hoard a home. If there was black mold, that depending on how far reaching that mold went, you could be removing sheetrock and flooring and, you know, however long you had. So that's where, you know, by the time we get done with the conversation, I know Representative Swedinski had was very articulate about explaining, like, well, it sounds like you could almost gut the whole house and start over if it was that bad. So I would be really interested to see that list if it was tightened up a little bit. And specifically, is hoarding still on the list? If there is, now I have someone in my town that has serious issues and it spills out into the outside everywhere. And so it could be tens, if not more, thousands of dollars to de-hoard, declutter, to be able to do that. I'm just wondering if that's still part of it.
Deputy Commissioner Grancy.
Yeah, Chair Acomb, Representative. I appreciate that concern, and the testifier who comes from one of the, that I think you're referencing from last year, that comes from one of the local service providers, they see at times some very difficult situations. When there's a reference to addressing hoarding, it isn't to go and spend tens of thousands of dollars to clean somebody's home for them. It is to be able to spend a limited amount of time to be able to, say, remove items, because the federal programs are so tight that a couple hundred dollars worth of declutter, in the sense of being able to move items out of the way in order for weatherization to take place, is what was being referenced, not the idea that we're going to go in and do a full-scale cleaning of somebody's situation that's outside of the scope of the weatherization program. I can, though, check and see what parameters have been put into place to ensure that would never happen.
Representative Brera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that because the testimony that we had from the administration was that was a good thing and we want to do that. We want to do tens of thousands of dollars of declutter and de-hoarding. We want to mitigate wherever the mold has gone. And I'm telling you, once mold gets a hold, it's tough. That's a lot of mitigation. So I would love to see that list. The list was very expansive. I was sent the preliminary list last session, and it was incredibly expansive, which I believe is why Representative Swedenski was so articulate in saying, well, it looks like we can literally take it down to the bones and rebuild it. So I don't think anyone had intended that when you talk about weatherization of a home. So anyway, I would love to see that list. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions from members, comments? Seeing none, I want to thank our presenters again. Appreciate all of the hard work and your time today giving us an update. And as things continue to come online, I hope that you will share that out online and with us. We certainly want to make sure that Minnesotans know what's available and when. And so with that, I will adjourn this meeting and we'll see you all next week.